This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Previously, on Reunion, Shark Attacks in Paradise.
Je leur montre à tous ces gens, j'en ai encore un là. Moi, je leur montre.
I show the photo of Sarah cut in two with her guts hanging out, and one of the people who had his legs pulled off, or his arm ripped off. I show this picture and I say, this is what happened. This isn't just a photo. This isn't a mosquito bite. The shark is like a bear in America. The wolf might take a bite out of you, but the shark is going to bite you in two and chop you up into pieces. And this is the violence that's been imposed on us by France. I'm a defender of France. I'm proud to be French. But when it comes to this, I told them, it's not the fault of the prefect or the sub-prefect. It comes from Paris. And in Paris, they don't care. We can die. They don't care. Maybe it's like this in America too. It's ecology. It's virtual opinion. People in big cities. Those are the people whose opinions count.
So all this time, thinking about the Reunion Island shark crisis, I've been wondering, and kind of desperately, what it was going to take to tip the scales. I mean, to get people on Reunion to stop fighting and talking past each other about whether it was more important to protect people or sharks, and work toward actually solving their nightmare. Well, in this episode, I've got something like an answer. Because this episode is about year number four of the crisis, 2015, a year that began with the same old political paralysis and ended with a tectonic shift in public policy and attitude. And it all revolves around two very different families that both suffered the ultimate loss. And I'm telling you that up front because these are awfully sad stories. And I want to reassure you that I'm going to reach for whatever light is available on the far side of them, precisely as those families did. And then I'm going to reach further to how the emotional strength of those families and the whole society's collective grief helped bring a fractured Reunion a little closer together. I'm Dan Duane, and this is Reunion, Shark Attacks in Paradise, Episode 12, The Legend of Talon and Elio. Now, before we get into these family stories, an update on the big picture, starting with science, sleuthing out causes of this whole nightmare. Remember that big catch-and-release shark study, the one that caught and released Estelle and Fanny? Well, they finally published data. On their big question number one, what shark species were we talking about? The answer was, yep, bull and tiger. And on their big question number two, do these sharks hang out in specific spots or come and go from the open ocean? The answer was, yes and yes. Tiger sharks come and go. Bull sharks, a little of both. And on question number three, when are sharks more common in shallow coastal water like at beaches? Yep, yet again, pretty much exactly what the old-time Creoles had always said. Afternoon, evening, murky water, yada yada. And look, science is like this. The whole idea is just to have actual data and not go on what everybody assumes to be true. But from a surfer and swimmer standpoint, it felt kind of like, wait a minute, you guys spent all that money and time while all those people got killed just to tell us what we already knew? So now for an update on the solution side of the big picture, concrete efforts to actually stop attacks, some without harming sharks, some with harming sharks. On the no harming side, yes, local authorities did put up new funding for underwater shark lookouts, but then national authorities said they didn't believe in the whole concept and didn't want to fund it. And yes, two towns spent a fortune on shark exclusion nets around little swimming areas, but one net failed in the storm, and the other got cut twice by aquatic vandals with knives. Who does that? Which brings me at last to solutions that did involve harming sharks. The first modest shark cull was actually underway with those smart drum lines, baited hooks, anchored offshore, and tethered to GPS beacons that, anytime something bit, alerted a fisherman who sped out for a look. They only caught 9 sharks total in 2014. But again, tremendous pushback from Sea Shepherd and Brigitte Bardot, mostly on grounds that it endangered whales, which, by the way, was not an insane worry. Anyway, back to the families of 2015 and how their experiences moved this whole situation forward. What year was it that you took your first trip to Reunion?
Must have been 2009, I think. We went for a visit to just see friends over there, and we went to the beach, and there was just all mixtures and all different colours, and white dads with black parents with white children, and, you know, everything was just mixed up, and it seemed ideal. You know, beautiful place. Everybody's brown in some way or another, more or less. Obviously not everybody, but the majority of people. And I just wanted to live somewhere where I could just fade in and not stick out like a sore thumb like I had all my life, basically.
This is Danielle Austin, the mother of family number one, among the very first people to speak with me in this whole process. She ran a nature camp for underprivileged French kids, mostly of North African descent. She also divorced and remarried to a French-Vietnamese DJ named Dine. Danielle and Dine had a child of their own, a little girl, when they took that vacation to Reunion Island and fell in love with the place. So they moved in June of 2011, right as the shark crisis began. They settled together in modest Etang Salé, Tanguy's and Coralie's little beach town in the south. Then Dine started buying local used vinyl.
When I listened to the first 45s I found in Reunion, or even 33 RPM, I was literally under shock because I've never heard this music before. I knew just a couple of names, famous names, because I was French and I heard about the main artist in Iranian. But when I listened to the stuff produced in the 70s, and I said, what the heck? It's just amazing. L'avion y vole, laisse à l'y voler. 6 heures va sonner,
l'y va trop son garage pour l'y poser. Dine's talking in particular about two local musical genres, Sega and Maloya, that people weren't much listening to anymore. And look, I'm really just sharing this story because I love it so much, but I also think it captures the heart brought to Reunion by Danielle and Dine. With Dine out there madly resurrecting lost sounds and digitizing tracks, he even shared them with a British record label over the web and within 2 hours had a green light to create a compilation album. And that, in turn, gave Dine the opportunity to chase down and meet the actual musicians, carrying licensing contracts.
Via the music, I met people I would never have met otherwise. And I started to meet and to get to know people more. I quite enjoyed it. If I look on the music side and the friendship and... I think I get the spirit as well of the normal people of the island. They are really nice, really, really nice. But they are not the one you hear every day or you can see every day. They are just simple and quiet. They know about the suffering as well because there was the slavery back in the day. And I think it touched the Reunionese around me, seeing I'm not white, I'm not yellow, I'm not Reunionese, I'm not French, I'm whatever. And seeing a guy from abroad falling in love with this music is, I think they were really touched about that. And seeing them being touched, it touched me as well. And that's when we realized that we shared something strong and not only this beautiful music, but also the spirit that goes with it.
In the 1970s, John Todd burst onto the evangelical scene with a shocking tale. He claimed to be a former witch, involved in a then unheard of secret organization called the Illuminati, and urged Christians to prepare for a violent world takeover.
First of all, the number one weapon in everybody's home should be a 12-gauge pump shotgun.
Hear the amazing story of one of the originators of the modern-day conspiracy theory. From Magnificent Noise and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Cover Up, the Conspiracy Tapes.
Do you ever wonder how celebrities order food? Like, is Sarah Paulson a Diet Coke or a regular Coke girlie?
Some peasant Coke? No.
Or how does Sofia Vergara order a pizza?
No tomatoes. I cannot eat tomatoes.
Yes. Are you killed mushrooms?
Not really.
Okay. If these are the details you need, and I know you do, I have the podcast for you. I'm Jesse Tyler Ferguson, and on my podcast, Dinner's on Me, I take some notable friends of mine out to dinners in Los Angeles and New York City. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
That thing was delicious.
Danielle and Dine had been on Reunion 3 years when Danielle's older daughter, Talon Bishop, moved down from Paris to join them. Talon was in her early 20s at the time.
What kind of child was she? You know, who was she as she grew up? What kind of person?
She was very strong, very independent. She had a very amazing determination and even a good temper on her when she wanted to. She's a character, a real character.
Talon made friends, met a young Creole guy. But she'd only been on Reunion 3 months when Danielle, on February 14th, 2015, at 8 p.m., got a phone call. There'd been an accident. Danielle and Dine raced to the hospital with their younger daughter, waited and waited. 10 p.m., a doctor finally came out. It's all over. She's gone. The upshot, as far as Danielle could tell, was that Talon and her boyfriend had been wading in shallow water, perhaps less than a foot deep, when at about 6:30 p.m., an onrushing wave brought a shark that took enormous bites out of Talon's leg and hip. Talon's boyfriend carried her away from the water. A doctor appeared as if from nowhere, just passing by. But it was too late. Talon bled out. And if you have a funny feeling, like somehow that timeline doesn't add up, 6:30 attack, 8 p.m. phone call, 10 p.m. announcement of death, well, Danielle did too. But before we hear about Danielle's search for answers, back to our original question, what brings a broken society together again? And from there into family number two. Giovanni Canestri, big, burly nightclub owner out of mainland France, moved to Reunion with his wife for the quiet life, settled in Saint-Gilles. And that's where Giovanni's youngest boy, Elio, technically Creole, became a brilliant young competitive surfer.
C'était un enfant très, très, très attachant. Il était très sensible.
Very sensitive kid. Loved hugs. It was very close to everybody. Very easy kid to manage. And also intellectually, well, he grew up and he evolved within an environment which, for me, had a good impact on his personality. The lifestyle, I would say, up to the age of 11. When he left school, he would go surfing. Sometimes he was the only kid in the water.
Elio loved to compete and dreamt of becoming a champion, which was quite real for kids on Reunion, by the way, in a sort of hoop dream sense. A local kid named Jeremy Flores was even then on the World Contest Tour of Surfing and was known to be a friend of Kelly Slater. And this is true to this day, like the current number one, as I'm recording this, on the Women's World Contest Tour, Johan DeFay, is from Reunion. the recent winner of the Women's World Longboard Tour, Alice Lemoine, also from Reunion. And in truth, Elio was the next great hope for Reunion surfing on the global scene. Once the shark crisis began, Giovanni put very strict rules around Elio's surfing. But he also tried hard to find ways for Elio to stay in the water, like in special surf sessions for elite youth surfers overseen by underwater shark lookouts. Elio obeyed his father's rules. He was a good and dutiful boy. But he was also just that, a boy, 13 years old in 2015, too young to make the most cautious possible choice every single time. Giovanni, Elio's father, happened to be working in Europe that year, running a ski town nightclub in the Alps.
Oui. J'étais à Courchevel, oui.
Yes, yeah, I was in Courchevel. It was the end of the season. I had another week left of the ski season. And I spoke to him the night before. I said, be careful. And he said, don't worry, Dad. And I said, don't worry, in 1 week, I'll be there. We'll be able to go and do stuff together. And we back, it was about 7 in the morning. And around 11 o'clock, my phone was ringing and ringing, and I was half asleep. I didn't answer it. And my partner, his phone was ringing as well. And then my son's phone was ringing. So I was half asleep. I said, wait a minute, there's something up here, something's important. If the phone is ringing like this, so we started waking up. The phone was calling again, and it was my son's phone. And I learned about Elio's death by the screams of pain of my oldest son on the phone. And that was absolutely awful. And suddenly, the life takes a radical turn in a different direction.
Elio had surfed the day before, a Saturday, with Raton and other underwater lookouts at a break called Les Aigrettes, or the Egrets.
So that was a Saturday. So for 5 hours on that Saturday, he was surfing amongst these spotters with no problem. The next day, the Sunday, he came back to exactly the same spot. We don't know why he went into that. Well, we do know. It was the passion for the sport that carried him there, and it took priority over his reason. And this next day at 9:30, that was the time he was attacked, the water was perfectly clear, wonderful waves, there was a boat not far away. So in the head of this kid, everything was fine. There were 4 or 5 surfers that were already in the water and had been there from sunrise.
Sometime that afternoon, Elio got hit by a shark again and again.
Non, c'est fini. La vie d'avant n'existe plus.
No, oh, it's finished. The life before is over. It's done. Il n'y a plus qu'un gouffre de douleur immense. It's just an abyss of pain that lies ahead, and an immense pain. It's indescribable. I think this pain can make somebody die. It's such a violent pain. I think it could actually kill someone. It's such an extraordinary form of pain. Of course, it's important to try to manage one's pain.
En fin de compte, le propre de l'être humain, puis en plus, c'est toujours très personnel, hein, parce que je pense que...
Each person does it in their own personal way. Each person manages things differently, especially the death of somebody close. My wife didn't deal with it in the same way as I did.
C'est pas moi qui décide de la calmer ou pas la calmer.
It's not me who decides to calm the beast, as it were.
Je pense que c'est un processus naturel que.
I think it's a natural process that happens. It's not conscious. I think that's something that the body does, that the soul does.
Quand je dis des positions, c'est des positions, c'est les positions, c'est des postures de l'âme, c'est les postures.
And it's our soul, I think, that positions itself in a certain mindset, because the fear is there deep down within me. There are certain triggers that will set things off. I know.
Que on va avoir au-delà du fait
the conversation that we will have together. I'm very pleased to talk about talking to you, Daniel, about my son, especially with our interpreter too. I'm pleased to talk about this, but I know that there will be triggers. And I know that when I finish talking about this, and when I go to bed tonight, I know this will be difficult. Because I know that I will have woken the beast in talking about this.
Now for how those awful losses helped Reunion Society turn a corner on the shark crisis. Talon's death, for starters, disrupted one fairly tired slice of the discourse. That bit about only Zorays, you know, those French white newcomers ignoring Creole wisdom, being at risk.
I don't know who planted this idea that sharks eat only white people, but that's ridiculous. But it did happen, so everyone would think, yeah, it's a white thing. The sharks only eat white people. And so Creole took a step from that and didn't get involved at all. And when Talon died, she wasn't French, she wasn't white, she wasn't surfing. She was only swimming. And so people didn't know what to think about that.
She was literally collateral damage in a totally corrupt and dreadful system, post-colonial system, that doesn't give a shit about human life, basically. Mm-hmm. That's why I find it's really unusual being, you know, asked all these questions, because no one's ever cared about anything like that before and asked me those kinds of questions before.
Talon's parents, Dine and Danielle, it bears mentioning, showed astonishing strength in how they coped. Dine somehow managed to complete and publish his compilation album of local tracks, a genuine contribution to the revival of Reunion Creole music, which is quite a big deal on the island now. And Danielle, who was unable to escape the feeling that government failure caused Talon's death, well, she turned herself into a kind of muckraking private investigator, determined to find the truth about what happened that night. And while that process took years, it got immediate results in newspaper stories about the ridiculously tiny shark risk warning sign at the beach where Talon was killed. Other members of that community agreed and rallied to make the same argument. So now we get to the moving forward, because in the same way that grief and loss drove Danielle and Dine and Giovanni into a second life, collective trauma finally shook something loose in the broader society. Kids from Elio's school marched on the French prefect's office. Somebody threw a Molotov cocktail at the offices of the Marine Reserve. The president of Reunion, the governor, in essence, offered official condolences this time, quote, to the family of young Elio, to the surfing family as well, and added that, quote, it is the whole of Reunion Island that is sad and downcast today. And he also pled with the prime minister for extraordinary measures. So did Fabienne Coppel-Sauret with the regional council at an official dinner with the prime minister.
Je me souviens d'une discussion que j'ai eue, un dîner que j'ai eu avec le premier ministre de l'époque, Emmanuel Valls.
I remember a discussion that I had at a dinner with the prime minister at the time, Manuel Valls. It was surreal. We were about 20 people there at this dinner, and since there were very few women, there were two of us, the protocol had me sit opposite the prime minister. And then I made a splash by explaining that in La Réunion, we had a serious economic development and tourism problem since the shark crisis had been very badly run by the French national government. I was very provoking. There was silence. The prime minister was attentive. He asked me to explain, so I explained why. And I explained why I thought the national government hadn't taken enough action in the management of this crisis. And at that moment, it was amazing, because all the other presidents of the regions, all the other ones, for 20 minutes, spoke only of the shark risk. This shark topic, it's emotional. It interests everybody, and it scares everybody. And you cannot be a stranger and not help the Réunion region find a solution. And that's how situations got unblocked afterwards, with some decision making.
Elio also attended a private middle school quite near where he died. Word reached that school while Elio's body was still on the beach, such that dozens of these kids went down to the water's edge together right where he lay. That is just a very, very different scene from a bunch of adult surfers who know the risks and are attending to the deaths of friends who also knew the risks. Just like Elio, these kids were all just that, kids. And when you put it together with the death of young Talon while just wading in shallow water, and also with the death of 15-year-old Sarah Roperth, also wading in shallow water back in 2013, it was just adding up to an utterly intolerable level of risk, something no sane person could want a society to live with. In the case of Elio's death, we can look at it a bunch of different ways. Like, for example, that after dismissing all those Zore surfer deaths for all those years as recklessness, we were now looking at the death not only of a child, and not only of the hottest young surf prospect on the island, but of a child surf prospect who had only one day before participated in a sincere effort by the government to preserve this aspect of local cultural life. Coralie Friedman, our super hardcore surf right through the crisis daredevil, was so shaken that she broke down and decided she just had to quit. I think you mentioned that after Elio was killed, you felt like maybe you should quit. Is that right?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Because there were too many shark attacks. And I said, oh, because I can't stop, it will be my turn. I cannot do that to my mom. No, I cannot do that.
And tell me what emotions you went through when you did try to quit surfing.
Oh, I feel depressed. Mm. I was in the dark.
She meant in her bedroom at home, with the shades drawn to block out the sunlight.
Trying to think about a new life without the ocean. But I couldn't see anything. No, for me, it's like, it's my identity, it's who I am. I don't like anything else. Some people said, oh, I begin a yoga or running. Not me. I don't like anything. I like surfing. I'm not a very sporty person. So I was on my bed in the dark thinking about my life without surfing. And my mom came in and said, what are you doing? And I cannot go surfing. And I close the windows because when I look outside, I know that the wind is good. I can hear the waves. I can. No, I have to close it. Mm-hmm. Close the window. And even if I see the sun, I know that it's good.
And my point here is that I think a similar dynamic finally played out at a social level in 2015. Because, in a sense, the whole of Réunion society was now suffering a collective grief for all kinds of reasons. Like Talon's death, to cite a relatively minor one of these reasons, shattered that tired old bullshit about only surfers and Zorés getting bit. On April 24th, only 12 days after Elio's death, the French minister for overseas France announced 6 million euros in new funding over 5 years to solve the shark problem on Reunion, including the creation of an entirely new government agency called the Shark Security Center, with gorgeous architect design filled with dried shark jaws, a great logo on swag coffee cups and fresh polo shirts, and both the budget and the mandate to finance research into innovative shark attack prevention technology and to run a big new preventative shark fishing campaign using those smart drum lines invented on Reunion Island as a way to kill sharks and minimize bycatch. They're not perfect, those drum lines, but they really are extraordinary. I mean, every time one of these baited hooks gets a bite, a signal reaches an on-call fisherman who speeds to the scene, and if the catch is not one of the targeted shark species, sets it free, alive. Beach towns, meanwhile, up and down the West Coast, pushed forward their own unique plans to secure surfing and swimming areas. Saint-Gilles invested millions in the longest shark exclusion nets ever built, one in Boucan-Canot, one at Roche Noire, both nearly half a mile long and expressly designed to keep sharks out of entire surf breaks. Trois Bassins, where Alexander Rassigat was killed, invested in an expanded and sort of technologically enhanced version of the underwater shark lookout teams with motorboats and underwater cameras. Christophe Molkin and the rest of the Saint-Loup boys started testing their own jet ski-based approach to shark patrol, cruising endlessly up and down that long, long wave, keeping an eye out. And all this gave a lot of people hope, including Coralie's mother, who, it turns out, found only one thought more painful than losing Coralie, which was seeing Coralie miserable.
So I was in the dark one day, 2 days, and then she came in one day and she said, "Please, go surfing. I can't see you like that anymore. Please just go."
Coming up next on Reunion, Shark Attacks in Paradise.
So I'm not proud of...
That you were there that day?
Not really, man.
Yeah.
Not really, man.
Yeah.
If I had to do it again, I would come up there just to yell at my friend to say, just don't look at the waves and let's all come back home.
And this guy, the last text message that he sent on Earth was to me saying, he was in front of the wave where he died, and he said, "It's firing, you're missing out."
Reunion, Shark Attacks in Paradise is a production of Hyper Object Industries, Little Everywhere, and Sony Music Entertainment. It's written, reported, and hosted by me, Dan Duane. Executive produced by Adam McKay, Claire Slaughter, Harry Nelson, Dan Gallucci, and Jane Marie. Produced and engineered by Joy Sanford, Mike Richter, Dan Gallucci, and Jane Marie, with help from Zaylee Mahone. Edited by Dan Gallucci and Jane Marie. All final mixes by Mike Richter. Reunion, Shark Attacks in Paradise was interpreted by James Christie and Pauline Chardin. Special thanks to all of our voice actors, Fred Giel, Sandrine Ristello, Giulio Mendi, and Marley Otto, and to the many people on Reunion Island that helped make all of this possible.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com code program.